And now I wish we hadn't gone and destroyed it. Cause I was thinking we could pull another weekender. You still got a little bit of clairvoyance. I remember the metal bar.
This is the Hood Rat Recap. We want to be the most steadiest of your Hold Steady podcasts. I am Mike from St. Paul. St. Paul must be the unluckiest saint of them all. And I'm joined, as always, with the King of Queens, Gasper. Say hello, Gasper.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. And then, Gasper, I don't know, you might be like me, kind of confused. We heard a little Weekenders, because that's what we're talking about today, is the Weekenders. And then we heard a little not Hold Steady adjacent song. That's because we have a very special guest today. It's Dave Woodcock, and the song we heard was from Dave Woodcock and the Dead Comedians, and that song was called "At the Pharmacy." And I don't know about you, Gasper, but that one kind of it reminds me a little bit of the ER as an after bar kind of vibe to it. That's kind of got the same vibe to it.
Man, I'm digging these guys.
Me too. They sound very Hold Steady adjacent. And what we're going to talk about them a little later in this episode here. So, all right, let's get into this. So what we kind of had to separate this. We get into a pretty deep night one here of the Weekenders over there in London. So we're going to cover that today. And then right after that, we're going to jump into our probably first and last film review. We're going to review a little movie called Stuck Between Stations. So let's jump right into Dave. Hang on a second. So joining us today is Dave Woodcock. He's a magician himself.
He's a mystic magician.
Maybe he is good at magic. I don't know. But he's got a little band called Dave Woodcock and the Dead Comedians. And I like that sweatshirt. You're wearing a little Minneapolis sweatshirt there, the Replacements. Do they have a big following over in England too? Or?
I don't think I've met. I know a couple of people who are Mets fans, but I didn't really meet anybody else who liked them until I saw the reunion shows that they did. So they were kind of a bit of a secret pack. Well, you know, anyone who came in contact with me, you know, at my house would be forced to listen to some Replacements. But I didn't know any kind of big Replacements.
Well, that's kind of fitting that they're underground in England, because believe it or not, they're actually pretty underground in America. not everybody.
Part of the charm, I think, it's like a little, you know, the little secret band that you pass on to people and go, you know, you'll really like these guys.
And it's Mike again here. I should mention we start out with an oopsie right away. We recorded this over three different time zones across the pond into UK. So we had a little freeze up here, but we started talking about the first song of the sound check, Unpleasant Breakfast. So let's join that already in progress.
So it was good to hear. It was much better to hear with, you know, a couple of thousand people in attendance rather than 50. But it was still a nice opening salvo for the sound check.
Absolutely. And that would be the unofficial debut of the Woos in England, actually, right?
Four o'clock in the afternoon, after most people traveling, the Woos were a little subdued. Subdued Woos? Are you listening, Craig?
Subdued Woos? Well, it was fun. On my feed, I was listening to the live feed, and I think it was just like Bandcamp. You could hear the band really well, but you couldn't hear the crowd at all. So I didn't actually hear the Woos. Did you hear them, Gasper?
Right. I didn't, actually. You're right. You didn't really get the crowd. There wasn't, as like you say, there wasn't a lot of people there. Well, not that there wasn't a lot of people there. It's a much less crowded room at that point. It's, what would you say, about 150 people?
For the sound check? Or less than that. About 50, if there's, you know.
Right. They're always more intimate than that, which is awesome. It's a different experience altogether. And you know what? We should mention, so they had the Horn Study there for that as well. Which was kind of cool. I've never seen that, I don't think, at a sound check party. That was kind of cool.
They went all out for this sound check, I tell you.
And then they go into Heavy Covenant.
Yeah, and another real favorite of mine after the new one. And that sounded fantastic with the horns. I really loved that tune. So I was kind of going, all right, kind of deep compressing a little bit here, and this is going to be a good time, I think.
Right, and then we go. So basically, then they go into the Q&A, which was mostly about. They talked a little bit about COVID and how that affected things, and pretty much that Unpleasant Breakfast is new music to everyone at this point, even though it's been out for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then they jump into a brand new song, which you got to see for the first time. Like, tell us about that.
Well, we kind of collectively hold our breath and go, God, I hope this is good. it kind of flew by, but got kind of nice kind of backing vocals. Struck me instantly. I got kind of hard guitar, hard driving tune. I was like, all right, this has almost killed me. Separation Sunday kind of stuff. But with that kind of instant switch to, maybe like a major chord or a like rousing chorus bit, I was like, yeah, this is good. I took it in. I heard it, I think, three, maybe four times over the weekend. By the kind of, not to get ahead of ourselves, but by the last night, everybody in the crowd was singing along to it. I was like, yeah, this is going to be a standard, I think. A bit like Entitlement Crew was initially.
Entitlement Crew. The first time they played it and I heard on the stream, I was getting Entitlement Crew vibes off it. But then, like, the last time they played it, like you said, it sounded a lot harder to me. Is that, I don't know, maybe that's just the way I interpreted it, but.
I remember them saying that they were initially, I think, if I remember right, they were going to play another one, which may be this other one, Llama, that they played. And Franz was like, I haven't quite got the keyboard part down for this yet. So, and then they kicked into Bloodbath. I think I'm remembering that right.
I think you're right. I think that's how I heard it, yeah.
And from there, we jump back into the Q&A. Tad talks a bit about, the question that was posed was influences now. And how that changed. And Tad jokes he doesn't have any influences anymore, but cites Thin Lizzy and Springsteen. And I think Craig used an awesome term. He says, yeah, we pretty much, we stetify those things now, which I love that term.
Yeah, and I think Franz came in and said, like, we don't talk about influence. We all have our collective things that we're coming from, but we play old steady music. And that's, I think that got a little cheer from the crowd. From me.
Right. And I think Tad said something to the effect of Josh Kaufman, their producer, where he got into change was the playing Strats, which he's not normally a Strat guy. And clean guitars, which is true. I mean, you could hear that in the newer stuff, and it does change the music a bit in a positive way, I think.
It doesn't lose anything kind of dynamically, I think, or it's heavy when it needs to be heavy, when it's light when it needs to be light. It's I think we've got a really good thing going at the moment with this lineup.
Right. And then so then we're back into another song with Family Farm.
One they played quite a bit at the last weekend. I think definitely a kind of, thinking back to it now, probably my impression was, let's play these let's let the horn steady have a bit of a practice, because quite a brass heavy tune.
They seem like they got to pretty almost the whole record. I didn't get to hear. We'll talk about the Moth Club shows later. I know they played some of those songs that I didn't get to hear over the weekend. But I think that's obviously a focus of them for all of the cities they played so far. That they're looking to play the whole record, record, which is awesome.
And what does? It's a fantastic record.
Okay. So then we have another question, favorite London shows, which I'm dying to get out to one of these London shows, and I've never done it, and you guys look like you had such a great time.
Well, we're the same. You know, we want to come out to Brooklyn and do some of the US shows. So, you know, the grass is always greener.
Have you ever been to the Brooklyn shows? You
haven't
been there yet? Okay, it's yeah. Definitely come out, man. They're a good time. So they cite, and these are places that you would know better than me: Roundhouse, Bush Hall, Borderline.
I've never been to Borderline. So I actually saw the Replacements at the Roundhouse. That's a cool venue on the reunion tour, not originally. Bush Hall is where they did the third night at the last weekend of pre-pandemic.
And those are smaller venues, bigger venues?
Bush Hall is small, yeah. Every time they do the Sunday night, which is kind of, you know, quote-unquote, a bit of an exclusive one, it's a small venue. So Oslo, Bush Hall, and I'm sure we'll get to it, but the one, the Moth Club, was small.
Right.
Intimate.
In this Electric Ballroom, the camera angle they used really reminded me of the Brooklyn Bowl. Did you get that feel at all, Gasper? The camera angle?
So that venue reminds me a lot of Brooklyn Bowl.
Because the walls on the left there? Yeah.
Right. Heather and I were talking, and we were saying that it almost looks identical except for the fact that it doesn't have the bowling alleys.
It's
a larger, it almost appears to be a larger room.
It does. It looked huge.
We ran the numbers on it, and they're pretty much identical. It's a 1,500 person capacity.
Yeah, it's and I'd never been there before the first weekend that I went to, and I was, I was pleasantly surprised by it. I thought it was a nice little venue, and obviously the guys in the band really like it there.
Right.
But in terms of the camera angles and stuff, it's the same guys that were doing that were shooting it that shot the Brooklyn Bowls ones.
Right, they hook up with fans, I think. So it's got to be the same. That makes sense.
Yeah, I met the guy that leads it after the Saturday show, and he's come over with them. He does the Brooklyn Bowl ones too.
Cool. They do a great job with the stream too, because I just watched the benefit they did, and that was a clunkier stream. It was harder to get working, but fans seems to have it all figured out. And the 1,500 person venue, I think that's their sweet spot, because we were looking at First Avenue in Minneapolis, and that's about the same.
Yep.
Really different layout to the place, but it's the same capacity. All right, and then they move on from the song to that was for the London shows. Then Michael asks, which producer, dead or alive, would they want to be produced by? And we got Guy Stevens, who's the producer.
Yeah, I was the one that couldn't recollect the name. I was the guy shouting it out. It was a big,
wow!
And when he asked the question, my mind, that was an interesting question. My mind instantly went Guy Stevens, because I don't know if you know too much about Guy Stevens, legendary English producer, The Clash and Mott Hoople.
Right.
That'd be perfect, yeah.
And then the next question was, where do the ideas come from? Meaning lyrically, I guess, the storyline stuff and like that, where the inspiration for that comes. And Craig cited a Jeff Tweedy book, Letting Things In, which I now want to read. I'm sorry, my notes are a little... There we go. They follow up that question with one hold steady song they wish they played more, which was... I like that question because that's something we talk about a lot on the last couple episodes, is songs that don't get played much.
Yeah.
And they answer that by playing Guys Go For Looks, which I don't know which one to answer because they play that a lot.
They play that a lot, yeah.
First time I've heard it.
Wow.
First time I've seen it live, yeah.
Okay.
Or as we say over here, girls go for status.
Status, yeah.
Doesn't track quite well though.
So was that the last song then, Gasper?
No, they go into Chicago Seems Tired, which was awesome to see in that kind of setting. That's usually like a much, you know, loud, towards more, the end of the banger, and yeah. It was nice to see it in the Infinite setting. How was that to see?
It's one of my favorite songs. I mean, the whole of Separation Sunday is one long, brilliant song to me. But yeah, always great to hear that one.
And then we ended up with Massive Nights and Sequestered in Memphis was the last two songs that they played.
Yeah, again, I think to kind of run the guys, Paul and Rob, I think, they're called. So the Hornsteady UK, too, that give them a bit of a pre-gig run through some of their stuff.
That's an amazing network of musicians they got too, because it's a few different musicians in each area, and like it's they're a great addition to the band.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, really, really live. So I was looking again at some of the live stream last night, and some of their kind of contributions to it really pop when you kind of sit and listen. When you're not in the kind of live environment, just kind of right. Digging the band. It's like.
Yeah, I really like to see the Hold Steady embrace in the horns, because, you know, they kind of started out on the indie scene, and when they were bringing in a saxophonist for the first album, somebody goes, "What are you guys going to play the Night Court theme song? What are you guys doing?" Because the horns were so out at that time, you know, early 2000s. And so it's great to see them back, I think, you know. Now let's get into night number one. I believe it was March 4th. Mm-hmm. So about a week ago as we're recording this. And
And English Teacher's the opener there on that show, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually didn't get to catch them.
I caught the last few songs. They were pretty good. Kind of really nice kind of bass, heavy indie rock, as far as I can remember, called Front Woman.
They are so usually the opener is more local to where they're playing. Are they popular there, English Teacher?
Never heard of them before. I'll be honest, not heard of them before. Before I saw them announced and saw them on stage.
Okay.
Yeah, they go with a lot of unknown openers. I see. I think too, kind of like Minneapolis.
So I've seen it both ways. There's been some good acts in Brooklyn Bowl, like. If you're familiar with Ezra Furman.
Yeah, I love Ezra, yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to see.
Thanks, Andronicus, love Titus.
Yep, I saw Titus and them together, Patrick. Which was great. And who was the...
You saw Michael Imperioli.
Yes, I saw Michael Imperioli.
He's famous, but not for music, yeah.
No, but it's the name's escaping me right now, but there's a guy from England actually just put a record out, which is an amazing... Oh, Frank Turner.
Turner
performed, which was that was a great show. That show was crazy because he literally like landed, flew over from the airport right to the venue and played, and like you could see he was almost out of breath.
Yeah, I don't know if he's on tour or something. He wasn't. I didn't see him there at any of the shows. So he was there at the Bush Hall. No, the Oslo show. I remember talking to him at the Oslo show, but.
Nice.
Yeah, he's someone that I still need to really kind of dig into. He seems to kind of like his Clash and the Hold Steady stuff. Somebody that I really should.
That new record is, if you get a chance to listen to it, is awesome. He actually he admits that he kind of borrows heavily from the Hold Steady on this new record. He says, but it's okay because Craig's endorsed it. But there's one song on that record that like it could be Cattle and the Creeping Things. It's very very close.
I'll have a listen.
Sorry, I digress. Let's jump back into the to the show.
So night one, like we said, March 4th. So it looks like they start out with a Constructive Summer, which is a good, which they often start out with.
Just before that, they come on to. I went, is this fucking Barry Manilow?
And then yes.
that it was. It looks like we made it, and a tear almost dropped. usually, I cry every reason when Barry Manilow comes on, but yeah, that was a great one to walk onto, and then straight into Constructive Summer.
I think that's how they're kicking off this whole tour too, because they did that in Minneapolis and they did it
right,
in
New York
as well.
Well, it's been Barry Manilow every time. I didn't realize that. I knew it was a lot, but
well, you know, it's we're coming back from COVID at all, in all these cities, and like that's the message.
Oh, they I get it.
Looks like we made it.
Yeah, and I think going.
They should have done. They should have probably played it on the last night, though.
yeah, that's a good.
That's point. The big one to make it to. Yeah. So, and then it looks like they play, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songs before they bring the horn steady out. So
yeah.
Constructive, Swish.
Opening salvo, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you got, yeah, you get the Swish, You Can Make Them Like You, Lanyards, and Magazines. Which that Constructive Summer to the Swish was pretty good. That's not a 1-2 you normally get.
No, no.
I like that.
Yeah, that was really cool. Then they bring out the horn steady, and we get some Spices, which was really cool.
And then, yeah, Craig at that point said, this is where the band is getting spiritually right.
Yeah, he said, yeah. He also said, I think it was at one of the sound checks, something that really stuck with me, that because outside Bush Hall in March 2020, the last two faces, apart from my fiance, I saw were Craig and Tad as I was saying goodbye to them, and then we went into lockdown. And he said something during soundcheck that was something like, it feels like the timeline has corrected itself, which I really liked.
That was cool.
That suddenly, you know, we took it kind of 2 years out and but now we're back on track. It was a really nice way of putting it.
Right. I agree. I mean, that's my first show back from COVID. That's exactly how it feels. That's what was missing. I mean, amongst a lot of other things, but I think that's the thing I wanted the most was these live shows back.
Oh, yeah.
And he's 100% right. So then we go into Spices from the new record. Cattle and the Creeping Things, Unpleasant Breakfast, and Entitlement Crew. It's a nice little block there.
And Cattle, especially listening back to the live stream last night, was just sounded awesome with the horns when it built up into the last bit. It just the crescendo of that was just awesome.
Amazing. Yeah.
And that's a song that you don't really associate with, like, getting the horns on, because it's...
No, it's, I mean, it kind of, again, bypassed me during the night, and that's it. Yeah. Kind of listened back to it. I had headphones on, I was watching it on the screen, and I said, oh, man, the screen, you know, Mackenzie Phillips doesn't live here anymore. It's a cross town. A horn set. But,
that's one of my favorite... Well, I say this all the time. That's one of my favorite Craig lines, but I say that in every song. I say that 3 times, but yeah. I love that line. And then we go into, and then it was Unpleasant Breakfast. Now, were you able, did the crowd do the woos? Because like I was saying on the live stream, we couldn't really pick up the woos as much.
Woos were there.
Okay.
Certainly down the front where we were wooing.
You were wooed over.
Yeah. It was, absolutely fantastic. And as I said, you know, but talking to people that I haven't seen for 2 years since the last weekend, the big consensus is that Unpleasant Breakfast and Lanyards, which are two of my favorites, are the real kind of kick-ass songs on that record.
Yeah, Lanyards is so, I think it's underappreciated. I don't know, I love that song.
I absolutely adore that song.
Just amazing. So, okay, and then after the horn section, we kind of go into Sweet Part of the City, which they don't play that. You guys ever heard that live? I don't think I think I've heard it maybe once.
We got Entitlement Crew, which has just become a classic. I love to hear that song. And then Sweet Part of the City was a real treat to hear. That's a song I've got a lot of kind of emotional attachment to. In terms of, I just remember a great weekend once in Manchester with two of my friends, Chris and Kate, and we saw Hold Steady, Jesse Malin was supporting. I really like Jesse. Gaslight Anthem were playing a couple of days later. So it was like this epic weekend, and Heaven Is Whenever had just come out. We were staying on, we were staying in the sweet part of the city with the bars and the restaurants. And it just always reminds me of that weekend, and that to hear that again live was a real touching moment.
Yeah, man, I love that whole record. And you're right, we don't.
It's got the only Hold Steady song I don't like on it.
Which one's that?
I'll let you guys guess.
I could really live
without The Smidge. I could live the rest of my life without hearing that song.
Really? I gotta confess, I've always.
Did you get the deluxe edition that came out? I think, was it last year?
Yes.
I've heard it.
That second record of all the B sides and outtakes is now my Heaven Is Whenever. I think that is a brilliant record.
Yeah, some of those songs I think are better than some of the songs that made it, actually.
I think the whole record is better than Heaven Is Whenever, and I really like Heaven Is Whenever, but I think that record, now when I reach for it, if I'm going to play it, I'll play that record before I play Heaven Is Whenever, even though it's got some fantastic songs on the actual album. I just think that's like a bonus Hold Steady record that we...
They gotta release an album of all their bonus tracks, because some of their bonus tracks are very strong, especially...
Arms and Hearts, I'm still going to hear live. I'm sure I'll dissolve into a puddle when they play that.
They've played it quite a bit more. I mean, it's definitely not in the main songs that they're picking from, but I've heard it quite a bit over the last couple of years. But I think that's a lot of people are in agreement with you there. From that record, a buddy of mine had mentioned, so they put out that, what did they put out? The Nashville show, I think. Over Bandcamp.
Yeah,
and he texted me and he's like, "Is it too much to ask to get a set list with A Slight Discomfort on it?" I'm like, "Wow, you know what? That's a good point. I have not heard A Slight Discomfort since that record was new. They used to play it live because I mean they're showcasing a new record. Obviously, they're going to play everything, but they haven't played it since then. And that's
great. It is great. In fact, the last time I heard that song, not live, but I was on my way to get my first vaccination and that song came on Spotify in the car.
Wow,
this is one that you might just feel a slight discomfort. I was like, oh.
That's an interesting interesting So then we go into Weekenders, which is also Forever, and Sapphire.
Yeah, Weekenders is another one that just makes me think of of that kind of great weekend in Manchester. We just went to loads of gigs and partied, and also just the fact, I'm thinking we could pull another Weekender just after everything we've been through. Again, that was just a really, I think, emotional an obvious choice, but.
And it's so the title track of the whole weekend too.
I was gonna say, does that become like the title track of the weekend? Like Massive Nights becomes the title track for the weekend in Brooklyn. Like,
I mean, do they play that song at every show in Brooklyn?
Almost everyone, I think. So.
Yeah, I mean, they only played Weekenders at the first night.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought they played every night. Okay.
Yeah. But that's, again,
Is that one that people are waiting to hear at that weekend?
It's one I was.
Okay.
It's not, it's not one that people kind of bandied, kind of throw the title around very much, but certainly one of my favorites.
And then
kind of everyone kind of does the Craig's lyrics are like if someone plays a fucking great guitar solo. So when he busts out the track, and everyone just goes, yeah,
agreed.
even though I have to say, I was really annoyed the first time I heard that song. I'd written a song that's on a record called Poison Nights and Bar and Lights. I'd written it and demoed it, and I think probably played it a couple of times at the studio. And it's got a line in it I'm so happy with, and it was, why can't I remember my own lyrics, but I remember Craig's. Julia C was a beautiful mess. She was a train wreck wrapped in a casino dress. I was like, yeah, I like that. And then I heard Weekenders, and he had the train wreck there. She came in dressed like a train. I was like, God damn you. Always one.
There were some bugs in the bar. There was a kid camped out by the coat shed. She said the theme of this party is the industrial age. You came in dressed like a train wreck.
But yeah, that's I think it's remarkable how his kind of lyrics are so you see people down the front, all ages, all kind of different fans of different kinds of music, and rather kind of than being into that was an amazing guitar solo or that's a great chorus, people are just responding to individual lines, and
right,
that's part of it. You know, I hate to throw the word genius around, but that's part of it. Genius as a songwriter.
That's a good word, I think, for that. I think it's applicable. Yeah. So then after them, that Yeah, Sapphire, Chips Ahoy, the song about a boy, a girl, and a horse. And then we go right back into the horn section again. So we got Heavy Covenant, Sequestered in Memphis, Family Farm, and Massive Nights with the Horn and Steady.
Great run, yeah.
So
and Heavy Covenant is, I always wait for that in a set because I think I said this the last time we were talking about the record, and that song with the kick drum and you just see it in your head, like everyone clapping along and that's,
and it's one of those there's a lot of them on the new album that are, and I don't know whether it's kind of a hangover from Craig's writing his solo records and stuff. They do have a definite different feel to earlier Steady stuff. But they have that Heavy Covenant, certainly. They have these little moments. They're not choruses, but they're just slight changes. Like, I know a little thing go, slide your phone into the airplane mode. It suddenly just becomes a really melodic bit that serves as a chorus, but isn't actually a chorus. I don't know what it is. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's. At the end
I really
love that song. At the end of that song, he kind of gives a little vignette of the song. Like, he almost re-sings the song, but looking faster, little shorter sentences. And it's like a recap. And you're like, oh, yeah, that happened, that happened. That's really a different style for him, I think, on that song.
Right.
Okay, and then... Go ahead, Casper.
No, I was going to say, you make a great point there, where I think early on in Craig's solo career... you kind of hear where his writing is very influenced or informed by what he's done with the Hold Steady. And now I think we've hit a point where like this record is very informed by his solo stuff. And you do hear a difference, and it's really nice to hear the band grow that way. Right? 'Cause that's what's going to keep a band around, is them constantly evolving.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think I'm kind of telling tales out of school or anything, though, but I certainly wouldn't want to speak for him. But speaking to Tad on the Saturday night, he was saying that listening to some of Craig's solo stuff, he was kind of, shit, man, why don't you bring this in for the band kind of thing? And talking about how the Hold Steady, suddenly find themselves in a place where they're a forward momentum for the creativity of the band, rather than just being, coming out and playing.
Right.
it's a classic in Memphis, and you know, just playing all the hits, which are great, but I just love where they're going. And I think, you know, this line, having Steve and then getting Franz back in, has really re-energized them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, clearly, I mean, they're doing better than ever. I think this new album's up there with every, as good as anything they've ever done.
Yeah. So then, from there, where we left off at Heavy Covenants, Sequester to Memphis, Family Farm, Massive Nights, and that's going to end the horn section part. And we're into Stuck Between Stations.
Now we're into the big heavy hitters now.
Yeah, you kind of know when Massive Nights comes out that we're headed for the finish line now. And everyone just goes crazy when Stuck Between comes on. Yeah. And, you know, even, you know, jaded people like myself will go, I've heard that song a million times, and then when it kicks in, you're just like, God, I love this song.
But if you look at the set list, you're getting, like, this is a hell of a set list, because you're from Family Farm, you go to Massive Nights, Stuck Between Stations, Hood Rat, Southtown, and Resurrection.
Yeah.
That's like, you're exploding at that point.
Yeah, Southtown with Franz on harmonica, just absolutely fantastic. And then into Resurrection. Yeah, the only way that could be better is if Crucifixion Cruise is preceding Resurrection.
The one-two punch there.
Pretty solid, yeah.
And just looking at the way the set list breaks down, like, it's they don't take a lot of breaks on this particular set list. It's usually there. Every time I've seen them, it's like 4 to 5 songs, and then Craig's going to tell a story, or we're going to do something where it's like they kind of take a breather. And
yeah.
I mean, it was Sweet Part of the City through Resurrection, they played straight through.
Yeah, they powered through, and I was waiting for the moment where they slowed it down and went, yeah.
So, and then now for the encore, you've got a 4-song encore. The Feelers, Stay Positive with Mosh Pit Josh, of course. And then Chicago Seemed Tired Last Night. And then, of course, we end with Killer Parties. So, all heavy hitters in there. Or Feelers is kind of a slow song. They've been starting out their encore with slow songs lately, it seems like.
Right.
All right.
No big surprise. Except to say it was an absolutely solid gig, and it was all over way too soon. But you know, we had another 2 nights to go. So.
Okay. So, do you guys got any other thoughts on night one there?
Just looking at it, it looks like it was just a fever pitch all the way through, man. Like, this is a hell of a set list.
So, okay. And then, let's, before we go into night two, do you want to do, you want to talk about Dave's music a little bit? Would that be all right, Dave?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to do this is a little section we like to call on our show. Wait, let's see if you guys can hear this. This is a little segment we like to call. And the meatloaf to the Billy Joel. It's called Meatloaf to the Billy Joel, from the Meatloaf to the Billy Joel. And this is a section where we pick out music, where we usually have our guests pick out music that they like that would really translate good into the Hold Steady. But I'm going to insist you pick your own music here, Dave. I'm not going to give you a choice. I want to hear some Dave Woodcock and the Dead Comedians. Why can't I say that name? And just looking at the titles here, I think it is a really good crossover from from Meatloaf to the Billy Joel. Like, looking at one of the songs, is called, since we're in March here, it's called Sober on St. Patrick's. That sounds like a Hold Steady song to me. And then a few of the other, I like some of your titles. It looks like your second album, Medicine, came out in 2015, so it kind of predates a few of these, but you have a song called 33. I know that's about the RPM, but reminds me of...
I wrote it on my 33rd birthday.
Oh, so it'd be Lord to be 33 forever. There you go.
I think if there's a crossover between me and Craig lyrically, it's kind of a bit of an obsession with growing up Catholic, and also a bit of a party lifestyle, although put the brakes on that somewhat. So 33 is obviously, you know, it's the age at which our Lord and Savior, passed away, was killed. The speed at which a record goes around, and also I wrote it when I, on my 33rd birthday.
Oh, sweet. And then, like I said, this album came out in 2015, so it kind of predates, but I see you have a song number 4, it's called Open Door.
I stole it again.
He's stealing all your best
now
stuff.
We know Craig's secret. He gets all his stuff from Dave.
if only he could have it.
So Dave, what song?
I hadn't thought of that before. That's interesting.
So let's hear a little. What song would you like us to play a little snippet of here? Is there one we can play a snippet of? How about Silver on St. Patrick's? Is that?
Since
it's March here. Oh, excellent. So I can see. I think Craig is kind of stealing some of your lyrics there. That was Silver on St. Patrick's, and I thought that'd be a perfect one to play on March here. And I noticed some of the other songs are you kind of in, it sounds like I heard a lot of American blues influence, or am I wrong, way off base there?
You get the eternal question of, like the whole study at the soundtrack, what your influences are, you know, what does your music sound like? And I always just used to say it's, it's like Americana rock and roll. Yeah, it's a big influence on that mixed with kind of UK punk. So, Clash, Dylan, Neil Young, Springsteen, all the good stuff.
Yeah, when I was checking it out, there's a lot going on there, man. Like, you definitely hear the punk side of it. There were parts of the songs that I kind of, it's not rockabilly, but it's got that attitude.
Sure.
Ain't that right? And, you know what I mean?
A big touchstone for me, going back to Guy Stevens, is London Calling, which is just, that's the Clash's third album, and on it they're just touching any genre that they want. They don't give a fuck about whether it's punk or it's what anyone thinks. Myself as the kind of main songwriter, and everyone else in the band have got all these influences, and we just kind of go, we'll play whatever we like.
Do you guys get to play the States much?
No.
Okay. When I heard it, I said I'd love to see you guys live, because it definitely.
I'd love to. We've got plenty, people over there that, are friends and acquaintances that we've kind of played with, and it's just taken that opportunity to kind of get it done. Yeah.
Okay, so that was good stuff. So that again was a. That's Dave's group, Dave Woodcock and the Dead Comedians. Can't say that name. But so that was that, and that was another episode of...
And the Meatloaf to the Billy Joel.
The Meatloaf to the Billy Joel, and that's it. And so let's say goodbye to Dave right now. We talked about night one so long, we couldn't fit night two and three into this episode, but that part will be coming up in a future episode in the next couple of weeks here. Right now, me and Gasper wanted to talk about, on the last episode, the Brooklyn Bowl, we were talking about how Michael Imperioli's band opened for the Hold Steady, and we're kind of discussing what was Michael Imperioli's a connection to the Hold Steady, and that's when we remembered that he was in the movie Stuck Between Stations. So me and Gasper thought it'd be kind of fun to do a little our little first time movie review on that. This episode, we're going to talk about a little movie called Stuck Between Stations. And yes, that's a it sounds like a made up thing, but there is a movie called Stuck Between Stations. And so why don't you start us off, Gasper? What do you got to say about it?
So it's a movie that came out in 2011, written by Sam Rose and Annette Bennett. And it doesn't star Michael Imperioli. He's in it. it's also got John Carnett and Nadia. I'm going to say her name wrong. Nadia Dejini. Just a little bit about who those people are. So Zoe Lister-Jones is the character Becky. She was in, she's done mostly TV, New Girl, Delocated. And she wrote, directed the movie The Craft Legacy. Josh Harnett, who plays Patty, you probably know him from The Faculty, The Virgin Suicides, Lucky Number 11. He was in Black Hawk Down, and he was on the TV show Penny Dreadful. Michael Imperioli is Michael Imperioli. We all know who he is, Sopranos fame. And Nadia is also probably best known from TV. Sex in the City, she's been on episodes, Curb Your Enthusiasm, King of Queens, Ugly Betty. The most interesting thing I found out about her is she sings back vocals on Jimmy Fallon's album, The Bathroom Wall, which was interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so do you want to go into what the movie's about?
Yeah, and I guess, so, oh, and we should tell everybody this movie is streaming free on Tubi. Is that how you watched it also?
Yep.
Yeah, it's streaming free on Tubi. I think there were some commercials, but it didn't seem like the movie was edited or cut it at all. It seemed like they were kind of the commercials kind of came on YouTube style, where they just played the commercial and then it went right back into the movie. It wasn't like a TV adapted to TV cut or anything, because they left the swear words in, which I don't think there was a ton. Just like, so I was just gonna say my so Sam Rosen, this movie. Yeah, and I don't think we have to worry about giving away any spoilers, because it's not that kind of movie. I mean, the whole movie takes place in one night. That's what kind of the big, which kind of reminds me of a Hold Steady song, is because the whole movie is all these crazy things that happen in a one night period.
This is definitely, I think the movie could be a Hold Steady song. Like, the characters are very much like that.
Yes.
It's definitely that feel.
And according to IMDb, it is, they said it is, the title is taken from the Hold Steady, the first Hold Steady song on the third album. It was kind of disappointing the song was not in the movie. They didn't have the rights to it. I know the Hold Steady can be kind of funny about giving their rights out, it seems like. I don't, you know, there's not too many times where you hear their music used.
I'm not sure how it works, but it's clear that they were in that circle, right? Because you have Atmosphere on the soundtrack. He does Should Have Known, puts that on the soundtrack, and that's definitely the Minnesota circle of friends in with Craig Finn and the Hold Steady.
Yeah.
And you name the movie, he does say that it's the spirit of the song is where he gets the title from. So he's definitely plugged into the Hold Steady for sure. As far as the rights go, I'm not sure how that worked.
Yeah, and so this whole movie kind of came off to me, it's a very small movie. It kind of came off to me as a film art student is his first movie, you know, like and Sam Rosen, the reason I originally heard about this movie is Sam Rosen, his dad is Mark Rosen, who is a long time, like decades, like 40 years, was a sportscaster for our Channel 4 news here, and he's on this morning show, the KFAN, the sports talk radio. Their morning show is more like a morning zoo. They forget to talk about sports all the time. It's more like a Howard Sterny type, and he's very funny on it. He's a very, I don't know, he's got to be close to 80 now, and he's still on there, and he's still very funny. And he said, yeah, my son's making this movie. And, you know, he started talking about it. He didn't make the reference to the Hold Steady or anything when he was talking about it. That's how I first heard about it back in 2011. And then I forgot all about the movie until, like, the last podcast we were talking about why did Michael Imperioli open up for the Hold Steady at the Brooklyn Bowl, and we're trying to figure out what the connection was. And I go, there is a connection. He kept bugging me, and I go, he was in the movie Stuck Between Stations. And then that's when we found out it was streaming on Tubi for free, and we both watched it. And why was Michael Imperioli? So he was in, so when he was very young, he played, he was in Goodfellas. Do you remember him in that? He played Spider.
He played Spider, yeah.
Who was a very big, or is it a small part, but it was a big part because he kind of antagonized Joe Pesci to the point. And if you've, Jay Moore does a great, he does the whole scene, Jay Moore, the comedian, where he does, Spider, I thought you said I was okay, Spider. And he said, no, Spider, I thought you said, are you okay, Spider? And Jay Moore does it better than me. He does a great imitation of the whole scene. But why was Michael, so Michael Imperioli shows out, do you think he, I'm thinking the parts he was in this movie were all shot in one day. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably in the movie for about 5 minutes, maybe six. I mean, his purpose in the movie basically is he plays a college professor who the female lead is his like student teacher, kind of, like she's training underneath him, and it's implied that they wind up sleeping together, and the wife kind of catches on. That's like her part of the story. So he plays this college professor who's like just pops in briefly and then pops in a second later, but he's not a major part of the movie. I kind of got the impression that like he might have just did it because he was friends with somebody who made the movie.
That's the impression I got exactly. And we should say he's got this is long haired Michael and kind of doughy Michael Imperioli. Yeah. He's kind of put on some weight, got some long hair here. I feel he does do a lot of these small movies though. He's got another one like this where it's a kind of a gangster thing where they're running throughout the night too. And then Josh Hartnett, who you mentioned his film credits, he was in Black Hawk Down. He was in, he was opposite Ben Affleck in Pearl Harbor. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So he was a big deal.
I think his part's the most confusing. Like, he pops in the movie and he's this, like, punk rock revolutionary guy who just gives the male lead, like, some crap, basically. Because, like, so the character Casper, played by Sam Rosen, is a guy who just returned from Afghanistan. He's dealing with his father's estate.
His father just died. Yeah.
Yeah. The connection between him and the female lead is they went to school together, and so they meet up by chance at First Avenue, actually, which was kind of cool. And they wind up having this night together, and like this guy just pops up to give him crap about like being in the war because he's like against that. And they go to that punk rock circus, which I'm actually kind of curious. Like, is that a thing in Minneapolis? Because it was one of the coolest scenes.
It was a very cool scene. It's not real as far as I know. It looks like it was shot in the Varsity Theater is what I'm thinking. I meant to look that up. Josh Hartnett.
It did leave me going, like, why is the scene in the movie?
Yes. Yes. So we should, yeah. So this movie starts, the opening scene is in First Avenue, right? They're shooting pool on First Avenue, and he's drinking at a bar, which now I'm thinking... You've been to First Avenue. I don't think they have pool tables. And I don't.
They don't.
They don't. And nobody goes there to drink. They make it feel like it's, like this whole movie takes place in one night. And I think they make it feel like it starts at happy hour is what I get the feeling. Like they're at happy hour because there's hardly anybody there, which I don't think you can drink at happy hour. You can drink where we all met at the Depot, which is inside of First Avenue, but it's not like in First Avenue itself. So that was cool. And then he goes and sits outside in First Avenue and you see the stars, and they repaint the stars every couple years. And that was two different iterations ago because they were like white puffy stars and then they went to silver stars. And now they have the white non-puffy stars. I don't know how to describe it. But
it's interesting because I actually questioned whether they were trying to recreate First Avenue because the stars were not as I remember them when I was there. And now that makes sense. That's interesting.
Yeah, every three or whatever, how many years they repaint them. And he sees a girl at First Avenue. He's back. It doesn't make it if he's back from Afghanistan, if he's between tours, or if they just sent him back because his father just died. They didn't really make that clear.
Oh,
I couldn't tell if he was on leave or if he was between tours.
I took it to mean he was on leave to deal with that.
That's what I took it as, which really helps the title Stuck Between Stations. He's kind of stuck between, you know, I thought that was pretty interesting. I did like that opening scene where he kind of, like, he sees the girl and you don't know what his relationship is with her. And some guy's picking her up around the pool table and he goes, hey, you want to, you know, he tries to be the hero. And they don't even show the fight. They have such a small budget. I don't think they didn't want to choreograph a fight. You just see the aftermath.
They just show him getting thrown out of the bar.
They show him getting thrown out of the bar. I did like that scene. He's talking on his cell phone and he's like, I seen, what's her name? In the Rebecca?
Becky Fine.
Yeah, he goes, I seen that. Becky Fine. And she comes walking up to him as he's talking on the phone. And I go, oh, they know each other. And this was my favorite part of the movie, is it, because it seemed most like real life, where he remembered her from elementary and a little bit from high school. And she didn't really remember him at all. And that's how it is in real life. One person right. always remembers clearly. And the other person's like, I can kind of remember you or whatever. So I thought that was great, because that was made an interesting dynamic to the rest of the... So they go on spending the rest of the night to each other. Like you said, some crazy things. I think Josh Hartnett's in the movie. Like you said, he's got a weird... He plays against type. He always played the pretty boy, and here he's kind of playing like... doing what Mickey Rourke did in The Wrestler. He just kind of looks like a mess in this movie. Kind of playing against right. this pretty boy type. And so they do... So what happens... It kind of reminded me, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Garden State, where they have the towards, oh, okay, so the end of the movie, that's a Zach Braff's first movie, and at the end of that movie, they kind of have to go on all these crazy little missions, like in one time period, and that's kind of what this movie reminded me of. They go on these little, like, missions. The favorite, like, he's riding a BMX bike throughout the movie.
That whole crew, he's got like a crew of friends, and like, that was one of the elements where it's like, oh, this is like a whole study song, like this is
yeah
like,
he has a whole crew of
crew, you know,
yeah, like
and
Josh
go to that weird punk rock circus where it's like they're all punk rock kids, but there's people doing like Circus LA tie-up
Circus LA stuff. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it's a wild scene. That's but you kind of like, well, where is this going? And it doesn't go anywhere.
Except he leaves his BMX bike there, he walks away. But, yeah, so they're riding, like, Josh Hartnett, they have a little bicycle group. He's got a single speed, Josh Hartnett. When they, I like that shot where they're rolling down the Minneapolis Greenway there, which is like, it's called the Greenway, and it's like a freeway for pedestrians. There's on-ramps and off-ramps, but it's just for biking and jogging. So that's what I really like that scene where, you know, they were showing off their camera skills, kind of showing them all rolling in slow motion. And she's standing on the back bags and laughing. And that, I like the, it was a good looking scene. Like you said, that the scenes don't really, some of the scenes don't go anywhere. It really had the feelings of a first, like I said, a first movie to me. I know some of the reviewers were put off by the split screen, which was kind of, did put me off a little bit too. It was only just a little bit at the beginning of the movie.
Not very high tech.
Yeah. So it would have been better if they would have done cuts back and forth, I think, in those scenes, but.
It's cool to see a lot of the parts of the city though. Like, so I'm pretty sure they go over the Hennepin Bridge at one point. I thought I recognized that. If not, it's something that looks very similar.
Well, they go over the Grain Belt Bridge.
Right, that's
yeah.
Hennepin Avenue, right?
Yep. So they do. That's a little Hold Steady reference to go over the Grain Belt Bridge into a brand new.
There's another bar scene where they're playing Buck Hunter, and the way I remember it, and I could be wrong. I'm curious to see if you saw the same. Is that CeCe's, the bar?
It could be. You're right. I didn't.
It looked a lot like it to me. So for me, it's like I've only ever been to Minneapolis once, and like watching this movie, it's like, hey, I think I've been there.
So it's a very good. They go all over Minneapolis. Yeah, like I said, Josh Hartnett. I feel he was friends with somebody because he's from the reason I know who he's from St. Paul, and he was like I said, he was opposite Ben Affleck in Pearl Harbor, and then he just didn't want it anymore. He just he walked away from Hollywood. And then, so he makes this movie afterwards where he's kind of against type, where he's, I guess he was being tired of being the pretty boy. And so he kind of walked away from it. And then I do like, like we're not giving away that this movie's mostly, what would you call it, a character study, I would say. It doesn't really have a plot per se.
Pretty much it reminded me a lot of like Dazed and Confused. You ever seen the movie Dazed and Confused?
Yeah.
Where it's like it's a hang, basically. You know,
yeah, like hang, I like that, yeah.
This group of people just go through their night. But it gets to a point at the end of the movie there, and it gets there in an interesting way. I thought it was pretty poignant. It's just that so much of the movie is not relevant to what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
And the point is to get the Casper character to talk about his experience in war. And the way they do that is they get the Becky character to tell a story of a traumatic experience that's, without giving anything away, it's a very traumatic experience. And it's like, wow, okay, that is the parallel to like what it must be like.
Yeah.
For someone who had been through war. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's just you could probably do the movie in about 25 minutes.
Yes.
Instead of an hour.
Yeah, exactly. There's like a whole, and I guess it was to give it physical comedy where she lost her computer, and I go, oh, her computer must have something on it that's important because she leaves it at Michael Imperioli's house. And then Sam crawls up through his front top window and gets the computer, and then she's like, oh, you know, I got my computer back. And I thought there was something on it that she needed, or, you know, it was just like she right. just needed her laptop back or whatever. But
I think they kind of imply that, like, whatever it is she's working on, like dissertation, like something you would work on for like an entire year or an entire period of your college time.
Yeah.
That's what she's getting back.
Okay.
But they never really tell you what it is or what it's about. Or
yeah, know, I thought it was going to be more poignant to the story. And I think they just did it for some fun. It was a fun action scene where, you know, some physical comedy there and stuff. And then that was it. And like you said, yeah, the ending's very poignant. And I like the ending actually, when because both characters reviewed stories about them or background stories. And I go, oh, that kind of explains why they were acting this way the whole movie. You know, you kind of get that after you hear their final stories. So it's a very little movie. so are we going to get it? So we can't say thumbs up or thumbs down. We don't, but we can say stream it or not stream it. Do you think, what would you rate it? Would you rate it stream it or not stream it?
And I think as a Hold Steady fan, just to, you know, to, if you're bored, sure, stream it. It's not a terrible movie. It's not a great movie, but it's not a terrible movie.
Yeah. I'm going to have to agree with you. I'd say stream it. I kind of, now that I'm talking about it, I kind of remember to see some of the things they were going for. Yeah, it's a fun, it's a little movie. It's not going to be, like I said, it doesn't have huge stars in it, you know, and the ones that are in it are just in it for a short time. It's kind of fun if you're into film. It's kind of fun to see somebody making their first film. It kind of gives a lot of that to me. It's not like She's Gotta Have It by Lee, Spike Lee, but, you know, his first student film. But it's a good little student film, I think. All right, so that's, like I said, Gaspar, I think that's the first and last time we might review a movie on here. I thought I was going to float this by you. I think we should do a Positive Rage, kind of the documentary that Hold Steady had. Might have to review that sometime.
That'd be a lot of fun, actually, yeah.
Might have to do that in upcoming episodes. We got a lot of stuff planned here. Gaspar, why don't you tell us where they can reach us on social media?
Absolutely. So we have a new Facebook page. You can find us at the Hood Rat Recap Facebook page. And we are also on Twitter at Hood Rat Recap. It's just the at symbol and Hood Rat Recap. Check us out on Twitter. And we want to thank Dave for being our guest today. And I'm Gaspar. This is Mike and Dave and you guys. We are all the Hood Rat Recap.
Yeah.
There is so much joy in what we do up here. An Ybor City is thrice speedy, but they throw such killer parties. Killer parties almost kill me. Killer parties almost kill me.